Blog Talk Radio.
Crazy things with politics. So you've got a mayor in New York of Jewish heritage, some say he's secular, and he's acting like a Nazi. Just want to control everybody's behavior in their life, what they drink, what they can carry in their gun cabinet, a lot of things, behavior control. And, some people think that Bloomberg styles himself as mayor for life. But Hitler thought there was going to be a 1,000-year Reich, and it didn't last. Among the things, we're still doing our Irish week, and there'll probably be one or two more days. It depends what happens Wednesday. I have some medical things to deal with. But part of the Irish heritage, and they have made a great contribution to North American history, both in the United States, actually in all of North America, in Canada. There are a lot of Irish. The Irish were very big, the Fenians, in Canada during the late 1800s, 19th century. And this had their activities created an impetus for the unification of Canada from sea to sea as their model. And some of the things that went up there. And, of course, the majority of American students don't learn Canadian history, but a lot of Canadian students learn American history. Also, besides in our own country, the legal and illegal immigration, it was estimated that there were 10 million illegal Irish that emigrated to the United States, about 1 million illegal Poles. At least one was in my own family, my in-laws. We also had the Irish during the Mexican War, the San Patricio Regiment, were Irish Catholics who came to the United States, enlisted in the United States Army, were abused by the Protestants that controlled the officer corps, and during the Mexican War, because there was this common bond of Roman Catholicism, some of the Irish who were in the United States Army went to fight for the Mexicans in the Mexican War, and those that were captured were either hung, they were branded, horsewhipped, and of course court-martialed by General Scott by his order. And San Patricio Regiment is still honored in Mexico today, but there are Irish names throughout South America in their military and in their politics. O'Banion, I think, is one of the names. They fought in the for freedom for the natives in South America, fought with Simon Bolivar. So they have quite a reputation, and it should be remembered and honored, as well as what the Irish contributed to the American Navy, John Barry, and to our army. And, of course, there's the famed Gary Owen, which was the marching song used by the cavalry on the plains in after the American Civil War. Now, among the things, as I said, that you didn't know about the Irish was that probably of all the European groups, they were the largest amount of illegal aliens that came to the United States, and some of them went into the nursing profession. There was an article in the New York Times about 15 years ago that many current illegal Irish came through Canada, especially on the East Coast. And we have a question here in San Francisco in the Steve Neri case. He is part Irish ethnic and Native American, Tidewater Indian, as well as German and Dutch on his mother's side. The judge that railroaded him, a guy named Kevin Vincent Ryan, committed perjury on his political statement that was a sworn statement to apply in the election to be a San Francisco County judge in the Superior Court. Ryan said he lived all his life in San Francisco. However, when we checked his marriage certificate, which is a sworn document, he was born in Alberta, Canada, in, I think, 1957. And, of course, there were the illegal alien thing. We have politicians here, such as David Campos, who is sexual preference. He pushes that agenda. He came to the United States illegally from Nicaragua. We had Juan Pifre, who was in the United States illegally. He was going to be deported because of his sexual assault on other young Americans. He concocted a bogus marriage to stay in the United States. He was also working here illegally. We hear more about the South Americans and the Mexicans in particular, but there are other groups that enter the United States here and work here illegally, and they are there are Asians, there are a lot of Chinese, there are Filipinos, there are Indians, there are Mexicans. There are people from Nicaragua, like David Campos. There are people from Haiti, South America, of course, Argentina. And, of course, those that are Blanco or white pass. The dark ones, dark-skinned people, it's a little more difficult for them. They're easy to identify, for instance. But this is a problem, and we've got to get control of our borders and who comes in the United States and who comes in here illegally and stays and prospers. There's also a question about one of the most notorious Filipino cases is that the Garcia crime family, which claimed that they were being persecuted by President Ferdinand Marcos. Antonio P. Garcia had worked for the Marcos government in Social Security branch of their government, and he was investigated for fraud. He fled to the United States claiming that it was political persecution. He conned people here, senior citizens and military war veterans, in a project called the Dimasalung House. And he rigged elections. He forged real estate documents, $250,000, abused tenants, hired an assassin to come from a hitman to come from Manila, Sammy Yu. All of this is documented in federal court documents, but it's been censored and suppressed by the morons in the media. So these are just some of the things that are some of the factors in illegal immigrants who come to the United States and who prosper here and get away with it because they have political connections. There's also a question about the controversial Rose Pak. She's probably the most controversial Chinese in California. She came here. She was not a U.S. citizen. I think she was going to be deported, and of course, she made political connections and got protection. And she's a bully, throws her weight around. She's in more ways than one. She's a big woman, foul mouth, and she styles herself as a power broker. So, these are the Chinese, and then they also come here, the older ones, and they know how to use our system, whether it's surplus food distributions twice a month, Social Security, old age, all of that, subsidized housing, and the children are abused. We had cases where the children have been prostituted. There's drugs in one of these projects controlled by an American-born Chinese, an ABC as they're known. So these things go on and they don't get reported because these people have political connections. They're extensive, they're wide, and they're powerful. March 25th is a week of infamy in San Francisco. It's in our judicial system here in California. Here, Stephen Arie in March of 24th, 23rd, the night of March 23rd, a Saturday in 1996, this 18-year-old sailor, Naive, went to the Palladium, which was a mafia-controlled youth disco here in San Francisco, and he, being part Native American, Native Americans have a problem holding their alcohol. That's a fact. Anyway, he was dancing with his girlfriend, and then they left, and Juan Pifferator that night was doing cocaine up in the Castro, and he told his fellow cocaine partiers that he was going to go out and look for a young man, young white male, and Neri was apparently became his mark. He apparently put something in Neri's drink because Neri left his drink on the table, and this was Pifferator's M.O. He did this to other males, according to our investigation. And he lured Neri to his apartment in San Francisco's Potrero District, which is also up the hill from San Francisco General Hospital and the county morgue. There he told the kid that his wife was away, this bogus wife who operated out of storage locker, told Neri, well, call some girls and party. Well, what he did was he seduced the boy, and then he tried to anally rape him. He told him that he didn't have to worry, he wasn't using a condom. And apparently he had AIDS, or a communicable sexual disease, which was concealed in the autopsy because Pifferi was connected to the district attorney, a guy named the name of Terrence Hallinan, who's got his own terrorist connections. Anyway, there was a fight. Neri left Pifferi unconscious, and he was alive, and then he fled back to his base in Alameda County, which is across the bay, and to the USS Carl Vinson, which was the ship that he was assigned to. His hand was broken. He lied to the medical people. He said he broke it playing basketball. What was he going to say? I was raped. And he tried to get assistance from the chaplain and the other officials on the Navy base, but nobody could help him. In the meantime, the police were called to Pifferi's apartment in Potrero Hill, found him dead. We don't know if somebody came there later because the door was left open. Anyway, and Pifferi had enemies. So Pifferi was dead. And apparently material in the apartment was missing files, because Pifferi was involved in financial transactions involving the American Poverty Program. He was also the psychon, one of the of the Argentine banking conglomerate, the Bank of the Province of Buenos Aires. His family sat on the board of directors there, oldest bank in Argentina, dating back to 1842. Anyway, Neri called to see, you know, what was the condition of the guy he left unconscious. In the meantime, the police, he left his T-shirt behind, and there was blood on it, and they identified Neri from the ID on his T-shirt. A $2 million warrant was issued, although we never saw this warrant. It's not in the court records. His public defender never asked for this warrant because under federal regulations, federal military regulations, a warrant, when it is issued for an American serviceman, It has to be served in the presence of his commanding officer or someone so designated, and he has to see the warrant. Well, Nary never saw the warrant, and nobody knows where this warrant was or who it was served on. And there was a midnight interrogation on a Friday morning, which would have been late afternoon in Washington, D.C., no lawyer or JAG was present, which is mandatory for in a serious matter such as this. These are Navy regulations, due process regulations. Nary was taken off the ship on Friday and incarcerated for 3.5 years in the San Francisco County City Prison. He was denied medical aid for his broken hand. He was denied access to outside fresh air and sunlight for 3.5 years. His bail was reduced to $1 million. He was denied access to P. Ferre's sexual disease status, whether he had AIDS, VD, gonorrhea, all the other diseases that homosexuals who are active and promiscuous catch in San Francisco, or whether P. Ferre had hepatitis or tuberculosis or any of those diseases. These are also connected to promiscuous homosexuals here in California, and P. Ferre got around. There was a they tried to put Nary on trial during Gay Pride Week in 1999. Nary removed the case, filing in the U.S. District Court, and the case was there, went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the title was altered from U.S. Navy sailor to just plain civilian. That was illegal. He was charged $105 for filing. If he didn't pay the $105, they would dismiss the case. That was illegal because he was pauperous. And then Terrence Hallinan, John Farrell, Wayne Friday, Kevin Ryan participated in a kangaroo court trial in late September, early October 1999. Nary was convicted by a jury which contained, we believe, at least one person who was not a U.S. citizen, and then a person who was Iranian lesbian who's involved in our nuclear program, Miriam Motamed, who also is one of the parties in the gay marriage controversy case before the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's all getting very interesting. Nary was sentenced to 16 years to life in California State Prison, even though they had no jurisdiction to try him nor to sentence him. The whistleblower in this case was a gay man. He didn't wear his sexuality on his sleeve, but he was a whistleblower. This was Nick Rommel, and he was a city official. He's the one that blew the whistle on this case, saying the kid was going to be railroaded. We didn't believe it. Nick was right. Nick was told to shut up because he was talking about other corruption in San Francisco. Nick's lover, Scott, was brutally murdered by another Canadian. So it gets really interesting. So you can go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site to see the documentation. There's nearly 17 years of work on that particular subject, and there are other subjects that go back to 1960, to the mid-60s, when I did work for U.S. Military draftees during the Vietnam War, and the work I did here in San Francisco and in California relating to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's Poverty Program and HUD, Community Development Block Grant. And what was given to the FBI and what was given to the U.S. Attorney. So there's a lot there. So go to AMICUSVERITAS. We think this is very important. Among the important things on this date is 1944, the Dutch positions were ordered by the Nazi occupiers, Dr. Sess Eckhart, who was a lawyer from Austria. He was the Gauleiter for Holland or Netherlands. And he was later hanged, convicted at Nuremberg for war crimes and hanged, unrepentant to the end. He ordered that the Dutch physicians were to register, and over 90% of them refused. This is very similar to what's happening with this Obamacare, and so this is the first instance where the doctors are saying, hey, you're not going to force us to report our patients and to register and to set up a situation where you can find more Jews and send them to the concentration camps. Among the other things that are going on, which have a link to the Nazi occupation of Holland, is this bicycle agenda. We have people coming into San Francisco, which is unique. It's all hills. And they're trying to promote this agenda, bicycle lanes everywhere, even though bicycles don't deliver pizza. They don't deliver Chinese takeout. You can't use them for emergency vehicles. You can't get your groceries with them. And besides going up hills, we've got major hills here in the city. It's not flat like Holland. And it's ironic that Germany invented the bicycle, but bicycles aren't that big over in Germany. They're not used for that transportation. You can see where Germans put their emphasis on BMWs, Mercedes, Volvos, Audis. That's where the emphasis is. It's four wheels, not two wheels. And what these bicycle politicians are trying to do is impose their agenda on people who don't want it in the neighborhoods. We're seeing signs in the neighborhoods. We don't want this agenda. We don't want these parking lanes. Not only that, these bicyclists politicians who push this agenda, they do not pay licensing fees. They do not equip their bikes with safety devices, a front light, a back light, reflectors. That we've had at least two deaths caused by bicyclists, reckless bicyclists here in San Francisco, several injuries. By bicyclists running down, in particular, senior citizens. They violate the traffic laws. They go through stop signs, red lights. They don't pay attention to anything. They flip people the bird when they're reminded that the rules of the road apply to them, too. They're also, they seem to have a lot of disposable income for lattes and cocaine, though some of those who are in it. And then the whole bicycle agenda in San Francisco, people that used to use bicycles were people involved in the drug trade. And the reason they rode bikes is because the cops couldn't catch them with their cars. And so a lot of the drug trade, the delivery of marijuana and cocaine, acid and all that, was done by bicyclists. So this is part of the agenda. Bicyclists are fine in the park, on college campuses, at the beach, in Golden Gate Park, and places like that around the country. But to put them on all the highways and on the side streets where we already have major traffic problems with the cars makes no sense. It's illogical. And not only that, these lanes cost about $30,000 a piece. And they want to shift, the bicycle politicians want the people who drive cars to pay for those lanes. Now, up in Oregon, there is a move to register bicycles, $10 registration fee a year. Of course, that's being resisted. There's some people complaining, well, I have five or six bikes. Well, if you had five or six cars, you'd have to pay for license plates. So the whole thing their arguments are so specious and so selfish, it's time to just say no. You know, if you want to put your wheels on the road, you obey the wheels of the road and you pay for licensing and you have liability insurance. In fact, when a person is injured or killed on the streets of San Francisco or any place else, it's the taxpayer who often drives, owns an automobile, and pays taxes for that, registration fees. They have to pay for police, fire, and the cleanup. In Oregon, another case has occurred in January of this year. A traffic cop stopped a bicyclist who didn't have reflectors on his bicycle. The bicyclist got upset and tried to kill the cop. So he's facing homicide, second-degree attempted murder. He hasn't been brought to trial. In Georgia, there was a case involving a kid named Dale, an 18-year-old kid who was driving recklessly. A woman tried to avoid hitting him, and in trying to do that, she got hit by a tractor trailer or a truck and died at the scene. So that kid was prosecuted by the Georgia District Attorney, and I think it was second-degree murder. So these things go on, and they don't get reported by the morons in the media who have their own agenda, and so it's alternative sources like Amicus Veritas, which has to report this, and some of the underground papers. So I'll go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We're going to end with our usual politics and poker. We may not be here Wednesday. We'll be back Friday. I have some medical things I have to deal with, but I think this is important, and we'll end with the Irish contributions to our military, and then we'll get ready for an expose on who's really behind this, putting predators in pup tents, trying to force the Boy Scouts to open up for homosexual activity and people who support that agenda. As we said, they have a freedom of association. Let them form their own organization. They have gay homosexual media, lawyers, doctors, all of that. So why not their own? Somebody described them as Rome Rangers or Badur Boy Scouts. These are people connected to the German Boy Scouts during the Nazi period. So there's no reason for them to try to force themselves onto people that don't want to associate with them. They should start their own organization. So we'll end with our politics and poker. We may not be back Wednesday, but we will be back Friday at 4 p.m.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the plan?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where to go, what to
do. All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll fall.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fudyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, play for a pot, that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck. Politics and poker, politics.
As Peter Paul Brizola, go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. We'll be back either Wednesday, but definitely Friday. So go there and have a good evening. And those of you who are back east, don't freeze, keep warm, and spring is around the corner, but it's not here now. It's supposed to be here now. So good night, and thank you for listening.